very highly collectible CD from the early 90s on A&M Records, when somebody in this room is actually a recording artist with A&M Records. So, as I was saying, was Jack, did you get it? I heard you say it, didn't you? He got it, Jack Parr. For the first question, you get two CDs. I'm gonna arbitrarily give out a couple more CDs based on no real reason at some point. So the answer is Jack Parr, and I really like this story because basically this was in the days of live television. Jack Parr, being the host of the Tonight Show, was a very, very popular person. And the censors at NBC, I think in 1960, if my trivia is memory is correct, he was censored about a joke he was going to make about WC, which a lot of us know is water closet, toilet, whatever you want to call it. And he was very upset about this. So that evening on live television, he quit. He just walked off the show. NBC spent weeks, I think two or three weeks, trying to get him back on the show because he was very popular. And so he came back on the show and he walked on, and the first thing out of his mouth was, as I was saying, there must be a better way to make a living than this. Well, I've looked and there isn't. So I've always really loved that story. So now, okay, we've already covered that. So who are you folks? I want to get to know, raise your hands. How many are already using GUI for .NET? And how many of you are actually aggressively using it, like it's really part of your framework now? Okay. How about web applications? And how many are you aggressively using that in your framework? Mobile? And of those folks in mobile, this is worth a prize. How many have successfully created a mobile application and distributed it for scuba diving? I don't believe you.
I'm a scuba diving instructor.
Are you?
Yes.
And you have a mobile app for scuba diving?
I work on one, yes. But it's only for local dive club.
Okay, okay. And they use it in the water? Okay. I'll give you a CD for that one.
Yeah.
you just come on up and give that. Okay. So I want to set this up and give you a bit of history, and hopefully this will explain, you know, the title of this. Back in 2010 and 2011, I was really excited about the GUI for .NET support for progress, and I was right all over and started building some controls to start the process of building a framework. And I got through a little bit, and I did some presentations both at Bravepoint and PUG in 2011. And out of that effort, I don't know if it was happenstantial, but I got a client that was very interested in getting, refacing their application using GUI for .NET, because they thought it was really critical to selling the application. And, you know, on some level, selling applications is show business. I mean, if it wasn't, we'd still be writing character applications. So, you know, they were looking for that nice, robust, sexy interface, and they thought it was critical for their business. But the effort never really began. Shortly after that, everybody was all over, well, it's got to be web-based, browser-based, and we still want the look and feel of these GUI applications. So there was the race started, and everybody's trying to come up with these frameworks. And of course, Progress eventually came out with their mobile applications. You know, enterprise. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about mobile apps for enterprise. It doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, I would say that a very small part of the clients that I have worked with do have a very tiny portion of their applications that really can use the mobile apps as part of their enterprise. But for the bulk, the meat and potatoes of their enterprise, not so much. So this particular client realized that they had a need, not for a mobile app, but to have a tablet. And of course, they wanted to be OS agnostic and have these their staff go around to particular locations with their tablet and enter in data. So the whole GUI for .NET went out the window. I was disappointed, but you know, this sounds cool too. So let's get on researching that. And so we did start researching that. And you know, I'm not going to question their motivation. I'm sounding like Dr. John now. I'm not questioning their motive because they know better. They know their business better than I do. So, so they basically said we are going to have a browser solution by the end of 2011. At the end of 2012, I got bored with the whole process and decided, you know, it's time to move on. But I did I did continue the quest because I really bought the idea that this was the future and we had to get on it now. So I kept looking around. June of last year, I signed on with another client. They needed a rewrite of their entire application. They weren't that hot on the browser-based application because they didn't really think that their audience really needed that, even wanted it. But I really pressed them to consider this because I really saw the value in it in future-proofing applications. I had a lot of trouble finding things that would snap into place. So I had some criteria here. First of all, I already had a data set framework that was tried and true. And it was comprised of a single API call for every application, whether every front end, whether, you know, open client, whatever you wanted to use. It was one API for the whole thing using JSON or XML. I made it flexible because JSON didn't have, still doesn't officially have the before image record. I believe that's coming out in 11.4. What took you so long? So I basically made it configurable to be XML or JSON, and if Progress wasn't going to deliver the before image, I was going to write a server-side piece to hold on to that data for me, but it doesn't sound like I need to do that now. So another thing is the fewer tiers, the better. Like, you know, there's all these little pieces to bring all this stuff together, and, you know, I love Progress. I wanted to stay with Progress, and I still love WebSpeed, but it doesn't have all that sexy stuff. So I also did I did a presentation. I know people kind of questioned the performance of WebSpeed. I did a presentation back in 2007 in Phoenix at the Exchange, where I basically demonstrated with a little bit of thinking outside the box, you could increase the WebSpeed performance by as much as 500% simply by putting all your UI out statements into persistent procedures instead of just doing it the conventional way of procedurally. So I've always been a WebSpeed fan, haven't used it that much, and I'm still, you know, fantasizing about getting WebSpeed to be a viable solution from a Progress standpoint. So I was concerned about, you know, committing to a framework with this browser base, and so it's a big commitment, and you don't want to make that wrong commitment because 2 years down the road, woulda, shoulda, coulda, and now we're at the drawing board again. And with all these extra moving parts to make all this stuff work together, and I actually subcontracted somebody that I really liked for their technical skills to prototype some stuff for me, and I thought, you know what? I can't get developers to do this, like, entry-level, mid-level developers. It's just too much. So, and then of course that all directly affects time to market, and that was the biggest setback or the biggest impedance to the process, in my estimation. But I found something that I thought was the answer. GWT or GUIT or GUIT or whatever the hell they pronounce it. I had really trouble with the pronunciation because I kept thinking GUID. But it's basically the Google Web Toolkit. What I really liked about it was WYSIWYG. All Java at development time, but you could press a button and automatically create all your UI and behavior, and it would create the JavaScript for you. That was awesome. I thought, this is it. All I gotta do is find that piece to do the JavaScript translation to call my API on my dataset framework. I'm in. The other thing is it had an IDE. The IDE was Eclipse, so what a great complement to our development tools at Progress. So, now the bad news. I went to the GWT conference in December last year, and all the stuff I really loved about it was not going away, but they were not interested in supporting it, developing it further, because they wanted to do an entirely different model that they were already implementing, which it was basically include files. Propeller spinning, I don't need that. So I was so disappointed that I thought, you know what, this is not it. Given that the present customer was not stuck on the idea of doing browser-based, and they kind of like the idea of sticking with Windows, but you know, getting an app server compliant and you know, having a nicer interface, I put back on the table GUI for .NET. Sorry, I went two slides here. Okay. So, you know, going back to my checklist, it really covered everything I wanted, you know, to get this application rewritten. And, you know, I don't need to go through the bullets. I think you got the idea here. And so, back in 2011, as I mentioned, I'd done a presentation on GUI for .NET. And so, well, as I was saying, I was looking for the ideal browser-based architecture, and I didn't find it. It's not ready for prime time yet, in my opinion. So, we're at the turning point. I did some quick demos to the customer and showed them, you know, some of the very easy capabilities of programming GUI for .NET. They liked it, and that's what we're committing to, and we're starting that process now. And in fact, some of the stuff I'm going to demonstrate is really the beginning of that process. So it's not cooked at all, but I will tell you, it is so easy to code, and it's just been a really pleasant short-term experience. And when I say short-term, I plan on having this presentation ready a month ago. Due to, anybody heard of RAID 5?
No.
I've been doing a database conversion this past month, well, most of the month in May, database conversions at a client site, which I will not name, a client of the client. And they still today have not admitted to me that they are in RAID 5. But they're wondering why it's taking over a week to load 100 gigabytes on their server. I found out through the back doors that they are running RAID 5. Their provider, their virtual server provider is running RAID 5, as many of them are. So I kind of got out of pocket, as they say in the South, meaning out of time. I usually thought it meant cash coming out of my pocket, but I much prefer the new definition. One thing is about developing in .NET is you have more resources, online resources. I've got some great sound bites here that we're not hearing because it's just simply not loud enough. But that was George Bush saying, "I like to look it up on the Google." There's the knowledge base, there's the community at progress, there's Microsoft, there's other community groups out there. Stackoverflow.com. You know, they're not always 100% great in accuracy, but they at least, at the very least, will point you in the right direction. So, and a lot of that code, a lot of the code samples are very easy to translate into progress because it's basically the same object model.
You should mention it for G6 as well.
I'm getting to that. You're not going to like what you're going to hear. So, I'm a purist. I've been burned many times in the past by committing to third-party controls. I'm not saying don't use any third-party controls such as Infragistics. What I'm saying is look at building what you need first. A, it'll be simpler to code. B, you have full control. You're not at anybody's mercy. And if they disappear tomorrow, which Infragistics obviously won't, because I've worked with Infragistics since 2006. So I'm familiar with the product before Progress introduced it. One person has described this to me who I trust very much, and some of you may know this person, so I'm going to leave his name out of it. But they basically said, you know, Infragistics makes hard things easier, but it makes the easy things so much harder. And given the 70-30, 70-20, or 80-20, or whatever rule you want to apply in terms of making a decision, I would say the bulk of the stuff you need to do is the easy stuff, and let's not make it harder. So if we can build it, let's build it. My disclaimer is I'm not suggesting don't use it. I'm saying explore your own controls from the native .NET controls first. And again, I feel strongly about this, and I know there's people in this room and people at this conference who would disagree with me, and you know that's what makes this world great, isn't it? So right here, oh sorry, that was a code snippet of something I need to mention here. That little code snippet there is a very simple way of wrapping a .NET control to make it your own. You may not do anything with it. You may not ever think you're going to do anything with it, but do it anyway. Because if there's something you do want to change in that control, it's so easy to distribute by having your own class through inheritance. I can hear the robot far in the distance saying, "Warning, warning!" One of the things that really, it's a Microsoft standard, so I mean it is what it is along with your objects, your classes, you have these resx files. And it's kind of like having a WRX file if you're familiar with using controls, but I don't know what function it has other than storing an image, because you can deploy it without, as long as you don't have an image that's associated with your object. So embedding images, I do not recommend. Do not embed images in your objects. There are workarounds, but I don't even want to distribute these resx files if I don't have to. But it really causes bloating. And let me just quickly demo something here for you. Oops. Wrong guy. Well, I have to restart my designer, because every time I switch networks or something, it seems to not be able to bring up Visual Designer for some reason. I don't know. I just noticed this like in the last couple of days. Okay. All right. So I've got this. I got this thing called badbutton.form, or badbuttonform.cls, and bring up the Visual Designer, and just want to delete this. Okay, so I've basically got an empty form, nothing on it. I double click on the ResX file, which is essentially an XML file. It's pretty light at this point. None of this stuff, I even know what it means. And like I say, I don't need it to deploy. So I would rather not. But if I add my bad button and save this, you will see that my ResX file now has a new node called data. Well, that data is basically the image I just added. I think it's there's a workaround that if you build a user control and then put your image in it, then it won't keep doing what I'm going to show you right now. So if I make a copy of this, well, that's probably enough copies. I open up the ResX file. I have the same image embedded as many times as I've made a copy. And like I said, there's a workaround. However, I don't want to distribute the ResX files anyways. So that's just my advice.
So you can reset the image and then assign it to the brain?
Well, that's what I do, is I do what Progress does with their conventional windows, and as part of my initialization process, my custom initialization process, and I'm going to talk about that, that's when the images get assigned to both the form icon, the background, if in fact you want a background in your windows, and of course the button images. So that's the methodology I've chosen and stuck with. So, as I stated, I already had a framework for the back end using data sets. It initially started as a super procedure. And I guess some time ago, I decided to make it all class-based because I knew I wanted to work with classes. And it was a really easy process to transition that code. And as part of that effort, I also had my own ADM framework. Now, this is before OERA. I started developing with this, and it was before the viewers could use include files. So I made my own CluG viewer using a smart frame. And one day I was talking to Hovart, and he says, "Why don't you just use an include file?" And I said, "Oh, okay, I could do that." So then I started using the standard smart viewer, which worked very well with my framework that it gave me. And then of course I customized it with my own properties and that sort of thing, and had my own managing super procedure, and basically didn't use any of the Progress stuff. I just used the UI and built my own relationship with the viewer, and it worked great. Still using it, still love it. And of course, well, I think I've covered everything about that. And this is the ADM model that I had, or have, for the objects. And before OERA, I came up with a dataset container, which kind of pulled all this stuff together, created some custom links, used a dynamic browser, and augmented that with my own custom super procedures so it would work with my framework. And you know, added a couple other objects like my own lookup. And this is all now, except for the super procedures that manage the objects, all the interaction and CRUD that goes across the app server partition is all managed by this, and it is a class. It is no longer procedural. So given that that model works so well for me in ADM, here's what it looks like for my GUI for .NET. Not much has changed. On the front end, of course, I have a different way of pulling all this stuff together. But the object model hasn't changed that much. And I also should mention that there's two queries involved here. One is the query to go and fetch the data from the server. But in my world, the browse, or the grid, owns the query. It just made sense to me. When you're navigating, when you're giving representation, so I've got this filter that will actually filter on the records I already have on my client without going back to the server. And there's some other functionality that is really great by having the grid own the query. And I will demonstrate that as well.
Maybe a problem was with large data sets.
Well, these are design questions and they need to be addressed. So one of the things is we need the browse, or the grid rather, to manage the batches. Now I will tell you, historically I've always found a way around that by having a temp table, which also is supported by my browse that is not part of the data set, be populated by just forcing the client to get some, customers that start with C, or, getting a finite snapshot, and then as I traverse through the snapshot of what's available to me, then I go and I fetch my record. So I'm actually only fetching one entire entity at a time. Having said that, I know in this effort, I can't do that in every case because there are cases where I need to load transactions and I will have to start doing the batching, which I think will be very easy because it will be part of my query mechanism for the query that is owned by the data container itself. Not in scope for this presentation, but it's on my path, or my, what do the progress call it? It's on the roadmap. And actually, I have already started working with batching with my data set manager, and I think it's going to be a fairly short effort, maybe a couple days. So this is really what I'm going to concentrate on in this demonstration, because there's so many things to cover. So I just fine-tuned it to a visual representation of what's in the data set, and of course I've got one filter that's going to do the filtering for the data I'm bringing back, and it will be your loving customer table, and it is not using the one entity mechanism that I talked about, where the browse action says, okay, just get me this entity. So the query will actually bring up the entire data set based on the query selection I put in. Again, this is not how I would design it, but for the sake of the demonstration, there's not that many customers I need to worry about. So no smart links. I should preface by saying I did put out a question on the when I knew I was doing this presentation, I put out a question on the PEG to find out if there was anything that anybody particularly wanted to see as part of my presentation, just to stick my toe in the water. And the first thing that I got, and I got a couple questions about this very thing, and this is all I got emails about, and there was only two. So either nobody cares about GUI or nobody cares about me.
Or both.
Or both. So the thing they wanted is to have this, you know, understand what progress is in terms of a database. So the format, the label, all that sort of thing. Well, this is something I did way back in 2010. That was the very first object I worked on because it was the one that, you know, for obvious reasons, even though I have a very small sample to go by, was the biggest concern. So part of the model is that once, based on naming conventions, and we have this here, this is the naming convention I have because from my old BB days, many, many years ago, that was the sort of the TXT was the naming convention we used for any text object that you were going to actually reference programmatically. So I kept that as my standard. It doesn't have to be the standard, and you know, there may be a schema where I'll have to build a little extra padding around that. For example, what if the field name in the database starts with TXT? Well, I've already coded for that, so if it starts with TXT, I get rid of that and then start with for the TXT object. I guess that's it. So, the glue that holds this all together, as you saw from the previous slide, is the object names. What do I name these objects? And I came up with two basic properties. The DS name, which fits into my dataset model, and the DS buffer name, so that I know which of these objects belong to which buffer in the dataset. And that was it. Doesn't get any simpler than that. So at runtime, I have my own custom initialization procedure that gets instantiated, or when the form gets instantiated, it automatically gets run the way I call the form. And it starts going through its entire occupants looking for that basic same method name. And of course it does it dynamically so that if the method doesn't exist, it doesn't care, it keeps going on. And one of the things it's most concerned about, and it's a two-phase process, actually three-phase if you include initialized components, which is the default initializer of the object. Then I've got my iTech initialize, which is my custom to really kind of describe what the UI is going to look like, and this is also where I set up the images. And then when it's addressing the data set container, it basically compiles a list of the data set containers, which typically there's only one, but there can be many, many. And then it will compile that list. And after it's compiled this list and initialized all these objects here, then it will make a second request to have the data set initialized because I don't know what the order of operations are. So I had to do it in two pieces. I can't trust that this has been initialized correctly when it's at this level here. So I have to initialize it and then run from the DS initialize. Then I run the grid. Actually, I've got graphics for that. After the initial initialize runs, then I've got the dataset container that's actually initializing all its child objects based on the reference names. And that's when these objects actually become alive and a subset of the dataset container. And the last piece is when the panel, and I don't think I mentioned this, I replaced the concept of a smart viewer with a panel. And it's got all its own intelligence and how it brings everything back together. These are objects. Objects know what to do. You just have to, you know, give them some information and they'll just do it for you. You don't have to write any code anymore because they know what they are. So, when this guy initializes, he starts traversing his children and finding all the text boxes that meet the criteria for this particular object. And this is a sample of the code from the form that traverses. If you haven't seen anything like this, it's kind of like walking the widget tree. So we find out how many objects this container has and start traversing. And then I've got a little method that tells me what kind of object it is. And this is a property that I've set. You'll notice I have dynamic invoke instead of dynamic. Is it dynamic property? Dynamic property wasn't available when this code was written. So that's why it's invoked. It could be dynamic property now. I might change that. There's other reasons why I might not, which I'm not going to discuss. But I did come up with an issue that the visual designer can't find certain properties that you've defined that are public under certain circumstances, even though they are part of the object. And I need to do a little more research so I can pass it on to text support. So right now I actually have gets on properties, and I make the property itself entirely private. Any questions about this code? And I'll just move on a little bit here. So this is the DS initialize. It's got a lot more work to do, and this is only a part of the code. And I've only included the case for the grid when it finds a grid. It does the same thing for a viewer, and it also does the same thing for a search toolbar that a concept that I've introduced as well to get the records from the server. But essentially, doing the same process as the iTech initialize in the form. So I'm going to do my best to demo this. I hate typing in front of people, so I'm going to do as much copy and paste. But I'm going to try and build a screen for you from scratch. We always love this part because there's always potential for embarrassment and failure. So the screen I'm attempting to build looks like this. And this is my search business. I'm going to look for all the customers starting with A. And one of the reasons why it's good to build your own objects is not only can you make them progress centric, but you can build a lot of extra features. Like, for example, I have multi-column sorting that I've coded to support this, so I can actually sort by city and name of the company. So, and if I hold the control key and click on the column again, it will reverse the sort of just that column. And I can go as many columns deep as I want. There's no limit. So that's one of the nice things that you can do by building, again, really simple code. Visible columns, I've just made a menu, so everything's visible by default. And of course, you can save these as user settings and store them in the database. And I can just, and if I want them back, I can bring them back. So I should also demonstrate here. Let's just bring all the columns back. And this is all built into the dataset framework, so I can. Change a value here and save it. Of course, my toolbar down here is also part of the dataset container framework. So every time I change an object, it broadcasts to the dataset container and says, "Okay, my value's changed. Go and tell all the objects that I'm related to that I've changed my value." And of course, you can see that Addix has appeared in the grid as well through part of that. Through part of that broadcast, and then I can save it. And of course, if I start the app again, just to prove that, that it's been committed. What's the name of the company? Oh yeah. No, I can't remember which one it was.
Sorry,
what's that?
1391.
Oh, there's several of them with the same name. Let me sort by name here. Okay, there it is. There it is. Okay, cool. So it did happen. All right. So let's try and build this thing with the framework. Delete this. New class. Of course, I want to call my form base class. Visual designer, first thing I'm going to do is drop a okay, I got a panel which is called a fine panel. I'm going to drop that here. And of course it needs a fine field and a fine button. So I'm going to drag my text box, which is geared towards finding records. I need a button. Find button. And I'm going to call this, and this is part of the naming convention. This also applies to my find, the field. Definition, the field name affected how it was rendered at runtime as part of the data set. I did the same thing with the find with a slightly different naming convention because I needed the namespace, and my working template right now is the TXT field name underscore find, just so I can have the namespace in between the actual customer name and the field that I'm searching on. So, gotta go to properties. I think I'm using two underscores in case there's an underscore in the table name. I'm hoping nobody's going to, or in the field name in the database, I'm hoping nobody's going to use two underscores back to back in their field names. If not, I'll have to do some kind of enhancement to cover that scenario. So there's that done. And now we need a grid. Data grid. Why it gets so big, but I'm sure I didn't define it that big. So we got the grid, and I need a viewer or a panel. I think I'd like to cheat on this if you don't mind, because I don't want to bore you with my poor typing skills. I'm going to pull the actual thing that I initially demoed, pull that up, and this is what I'm talking about. I need to talk to somebody about this. It's looking for a property that does exist. So I'm just going to create one panel with one field for now, just to prove the concept. So my update text box, got to put my panel on there first. My update panel. Seems like the clicking mechanism in Visual Designer can be a little bit hard to deal with. Sorry?
Click on that.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's not how my PowerPoint works. And so we need one update text box. And I'm going to call that TXT name. Now, I haven't set the two principal buffer, the two principal properties yet. And part of my, I got a happy result as part of the way I'm initializing these things, because I've got extra layers of initialization. I'm going to demonstrate something here that's kind of cool that I just added in the other day. I need my DS container as well, so it has a little bit of a UI at development time, but that will go away on the condition that I've actually given it a data set name. Otherwise, this is what's going to happen. None of these have had the properties set of the data set name or the buffer handles. So at runtime, I get a little bit of feedback. Oh. Another little gotcha. I don't know at what point this happened or if it's something I'm doing wrong with this version of Designer, but my recollection is this automatically got put in the constructor and it's not happening anymore, at least not in my environment. So that's why I got an empty window. I'm going to try running this again. And all my objects are ugly red because I haven't said what they are yet. And even my data set, which is data set container, is red because it hasn't been defined. Normally that would disappear. Oh, no, I didn't want you to do that. Okay. The data set I'm using is called crm.customer. I thought that was a pretty good name. What am I doing on time here? I've got some time. And of course, I don't have to define a buffer in that because it has many buffers. Oh. Sorry, I put in the wrong field, the wrong property. I have my own properties here. So the DS name, save that, and this needs a DS name. DS name. Name, and then I also need the buffer name, which is my naming convention for temp tables is TTB as a prefix, and I'm in the wrong field. Lovely. Ah. My thumb keeps hitting my pad. That's what's going on here. Okay, so I got that. Buffer name here. Buffer name here. Oh, and I forgot I need a toolbar. Close. And it also needs the same properties. So the buffer name and the data set name. And theoretically, we are done. See what happens. Everything's there. Let's enter an A and find. Oh, notice the name came up, but you don't see any fields because we didn't specify any fields to show in a property. So there's a grid columns visible. So I just put name in there, and of course that would be the only column available in this particular app. And we run it again. And now we've got the column name. Run it again, and there, the application's done. Ship it. Looks like we got about 5 minutes here. Is there any questions?
Can you look at your gut? Changing their properties?
Sorry? All I did was change the name to the properties, and the data, the framework itself figured all the stuff out. I should also, I don't know how much you're interested in the text boxes, but you know, they get the format and the masking are all derived from the schema. Laura, you had a question? From the data set. Yes. I had to add the data set name and the buffer name from the data set, the temp table buffer name from the data set. Yes. Yeah, these are all. Yeah, and by the way, I should also mention, I meant to mention this, there's no binding here. All these objects are talking to the buffer handles of the temp table directly. The word binding, the word bind itself really kind of bothers me, so I don't really do any formal binding. The objects just know what their handles are, and when I change the screen value of the text box, part of the control basically says, I know my buffer, I'm just going to change the buffer value. And then it says to the dataset handler, hey, I've just changed this. Oh, okay, change it in the browser. Okay, re-enable the toolbar buttons, because now I know that the value has changed, so now I can say I have the save button now.
But the binding source would handle it all for you.
I'm sorry?
The binding source would handle it all for you. And you don't have to code it again.
I don't have to code this.
You did.
Once.
Yeah, but the binding source brings it out of the box. You can just use it. You data bind three controls.
It's another piece.
It's changing all.
Okay.
What happens if data is changed by another user?
Well, that's part of the data set framework. It's kind of out of scope here, but the data set framework basically says, what was the value before I got the record?
No, I understand. Okay. But it's handled.
It's handled, yeah, but that not part of the GUI.
It's pretty much similar to the Windows application, which is in the .NET.
I'm sorry?
It is pretty much similar to the Windows application, which is in .NET.
Windows application is in .NET.
Yeah. So we have Windows applications in .NET.
Uh-huh.
So it is very, very much similar to the
Very similar. The only difference is because it's under the scope of progress, I can basically make my controls progress-centric, for lack of a better term. Like the data field here. I basically said, please tell this data field what format it is and what the handle is and all that stuff.
So we can use any database, I mean SQL database or Oracle.
This is a progress framework.
Okay.
It's entirely progress. And that's the point of this presentation, is that it's completely progress centric in a .NET world.
So it's tightly integrated with the Oracle database.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you expand the toolbox with your controls?
How do I?
So I see IT controls in the toolbox on the right.
Mm-hmm.
How did you put them there?
Basically, once you define your classes, I can create my own group, and once I've created my own, I can say new group. Add control group. And then once I do that, then I can right click and add controls. And I got this little control finder that comes up, and it will only show you the controls that you haven't already added to a group, which is kind of nice. So then I can add more.
I didn't realize that there's a right click.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So anyway, we're out of time. I'm sorry I didn't get to
your control that you've been using. Those were, you wrote those controls in .NET.
Yes.
And you're just using.
Yes. And very little code,
right.
And very little time.
You extended our .NET.
I extended.
Progress.
No, I extended Microsoft's.
You don't see short codes?
No.
No. So you did an ABL, that's fine.
I did an ABL, yes. It's all ABL, it's all progress. No, no C sharp code. No.
Well, definitely, it's like .NET, or you use VB.NET, but I'm assuming it's. But you're going to find your CatSox update, those are .NET controls, or
they're .NET controls. I prepared the native
.NET.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I basically just wrapping it and then putting my own function on it. And that's how it derives all the information about the student. One more quick question. In 1985, Led Zeppelin got sued for plagiarizing a song that they recorded under the name Whole Lotta Love. Who got the money? Because it got settled out of court for $1 million. Who got the money, or who was the original artist? Or the original title of the song for a CD. Well, the writer was Willie Dixon, the artist was Muddy Waters, and the original record was called You Need Love, recorded in 1962. So whoever gets here first gets the CD.
Minutes?
Thank you.